It's VIP of the Month Spotlight for June 2020. Our special guest this month is Ray Fournier from Sanford, Maine, to delve into the life of this recording engineer and musician. Here is our host, Teresa Rose.
Listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Of travel I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Mattawa, La Paloma, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Tocopilla, Barranquilla, and Padilla. I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere.
Welcome, everyone, to June 29th, 2020, VIP of the month of June. And our selected VIP of the month is Ray Fournier, a.k.a. Audio Mixer. And he was born August 26, 1934. And he and his lovely wife, Joyce, live in Sanford, Maine. Welcome, Ray, and congratulations on being VIP of the month of June.
I sure appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, Ray, we're going to get started with the very beginning. Please tell us where you were born and raised.
I was born in Lowell, Massachusetts. In fact, the same town that Ed McMahon was born in. He worked at the first radio station I did.
Okay, Ray, tell us a little bit about your parents, what they did for a living, as much as you'd like to tell us about them.
My dad was basically a truck driver. But when he was younger, he was a chauffeur. He worked for this company that people that owned mills in Lowell and in the area. My mom, well, when the war came along, she worked in a shoe shop, and she did that for years. My parents had 8 kids, and that was one of the better-looking ones.
And that leads me up to my next question. How many brothers and sisters do you have, and how many are still with us?
You're going to love this. All boys, so no sisters.
So where do you fit in the mix of 8 boys, Ray? And at the, you the oldest, the youngest, in the middle, where?
Yeah, in the middle.
So how many brothers do you still have living?
Believe it or not, only 2.
Wow. 2 out of 8. Now, does that 2 include you or a total of 3?
Oh, I'm living. Yeah, 3.
All right, Ray. Okay, Ray, I'm glad you're still living. All right, Ray, were you born blind or did you go blind later in life?
I was born with sight, but by 3 years old, I had glaucoma. And so I kept losing my sight gradually. And I would say by 8 years old, I lost all light perception.
Okay, so at age 3, you developed glaucoma. By age 8, you were down to light perception. What was it like? Because 3 years old, you can kind of, I can remember back to 3-4 years old. So you knew what sight was. So what was it like to lose your sight, and how did you react to that?
Well, it was so gradual. I remember I went to Perkins, and I had vision when I, but for, I didn't, remember they made me wear glasses, and then by 7 or 8, they made me wear glasses so that I couldn't see through it, to acclimate me. I guess that was their intention, you know, to really not seeing, because I guess they knew that, you know, I was going to lose the rest of it.
So the diagnosis of your blindness is glaucoma. No other complications?
No, ma'am.
Okay, Ray, out of 8 siblings, oh, well, 7 siblings and yourself makes 8, were there any others that had any vision problems, or was it just only you?
I had an older brother that later became legally blind. He could see most of his life. I mean, he could sit down and play cards with you and read the cards, or he had vision. but not full vision. Believe it or not, I don't know what his problem was. My mother never got into it with us.
So, Ray, are you a guide dog user or are you a cane user?
I've had both. I've had canes and I've had two guide dogs and a half. That's another story. But I've had, yes, I went to seeing eye for my dogs.
And what kind of dogs did you have, Ray? And do you currently have a dog or are you strictly now a cane user?
I'm a cane user now. And one was a Collie Shepherd mix. Her name was Lucky. And I had a reddish-colored golden retriever. And she was Buffy.
Oh, both dogs sound really lovely. Ray, we're going to talk a little bit about your childhood. What was your childhood like? Of course, you know, you had glaucoma at 3. By 8, you're to light perception. Were you treated differently by your parents, your siblings? What about friends? Were you treated differently or were you just an average kid?
When you really think about it, by the time I was 3, I was put in... It was a nursery. It was like they didn't know how to handle a blind person. So I went to, I guess we call it the Jamaica Plain Nursery, where all us younger kids, younger than 5, were there. So most of my school life, I wasn't home that much except for summer, Christmas, and Easter, and sometimes Thanksgiving.
So... when you were away, were you with other blind children, or were they multiple types of disability, or were they just visually impaired children?
Perkins had only, they had deaf blind, of course, and just blind children, visually impaired kids.
So was this a decision made by your parents because they did not know how to deal with a blind child that they decided to put you in a type of nursery school at such an early age, Ray?
I guess so. Of course, by 5, I went to Perkins. So that was just regular school.
Well, talk a little bit about your relationship with your parents. What type of relationship did you have?
I'll tell you. I'm glad my oldest brother, he did have a visual problem, but he could see. My mother babied the dickens out of him, and I'm so glad that I was born in the middle, not the first.
I hear ya. Now we're going to move on to your school day. So you went to Perkins. Tell us a little bit about that. Tell us about your early days at Perkins.
Well, of course, I graduated from kindergarten and went through the... We were in what we call the lower school, and we had... I get along okay. I had very few problems until I got to the 4th grade. And then we had a housemaster that for the rest of my school years, I couldn't get along with him. I don't know how far I should go with this, but of course my oldest brother went to Perkins, but he could see. He could ride a bike like around that neighborhood and everything. I mean, he had a lot of sight. And there were some kids that did, that were there, but they were legally blind. And this guy was named Ben Smith. And Mr. Smith, in those early days, they believed in corporal punishment. And put it bluntly, my brother flattened him one day. But the residual of it was, when I came along by this person, I was not treated fairly throughout, and I loved all the teachers there. I never had a problem with any teacher except that individual.
Ray, tell us a little bit about some of your classes. Did you take any types of sports, music, clubs? What were you involved with during your days at Perkins?
Well, I took piano. Her name was Mrs. Carr, a lovely lady. And a great organist. And when we would do concerts, she played the organ. But the head of the music department was a man by the name of Paul Bargus. he was my favorite teacher there, person. Mrs. Carr caught me playing other things instead of what I was supposed to be learning, and she dismissed me very nicely. I mean, she didn't make a big deal of it. And then Mr. Bargus said, you know, you have talent, he says. I'm going to teach you the bass. And thank goodness he did, because we had a kid from England who was in the Blitz in the Second World War. He was a very nervous kid because he was there when the Germans would bomb London. But he was a virtuoso piano player. I mean, he could play Cole Porter, he could play. And because of that, I got to play bass quite well because I had to play it to play that kind of music. And he actually got me gigs when I was in high school. And I actually made a little money because I never got any from home. Paul Bargus was just a super guy.
Well, it sounds like it. So at least we know where you got involved with the bass, which we'll go into your music career a little bit later down the road here, Ray. So how often did you go home? Were you at school during the week? Did you get to go home on the weekends, or was it just summer or holidays?
After the seventh grade, I could have gone home except for one thing. We had school on Saturday. Yuck. You couldn't get home. If you went home, we had school till afternoon Saturday mornings until 12:30. And then if you wanted to go anywhere, like home, I would have to go into Boston, take a train, which took time, and then to go home, I'd just get home and I'd have to head back Sunday morning. And not only that, I didn't have the money to take the train all the time. And I never got home on the weekends. And 2 years after I left, they got rid of the Saturday classes.
Just your luck, right? Ray, talk about your teenage years. What was Ray's teenage years like?
I was also on the wrestling team at school. And we'd wrestle the other blind schools. We'd go to Raleigh and Baltimore. I was talking to Tomcat, and their director was my principal, Mr. Andrews. Tom, you. And so I was on the wrestling team, and I loved swimming. And, you know, that was kind of the sports thing. And, well, we all played baseball. I don't know. I would say I was an average teenager.
So tell us something that you and a bunch of the guys or a bunch of friends got together and do when you were a teenager.
Well, we tried to sabotage Mr. Smith's boat one day. He couldn't moor it to a dock. The Charles River was right in back of the school. And he had maybe a 20-foot boat inboard. And to get out to it, he used to blow up air mattresses and go out to it that way. So he'd have all the flunkies. All right, boys, blow up this mattress. And I told him, don't tighten it too tight. And he was almost there, and we heard glug, glug, glug. But he could swim.
Well, that sounds interesting. What about trouble? Did Ray get into any serious trouble in school?
Teresa? No, not serious, no. I never get into fights. I never did. It wasn't that. Of course, the minute I turned 16, I wanted to go into the smoking room. Yeah, because that's all the big boys were. And I tried cigarettes for a little bit, and I didn't care for it, so I never smoked cigarettes. So, however, well, we'll get into that later, but Joyce is laughing sitting here.
Yeah, tell them about the radio station.
Oh, no, the radio station comes later.
Oh, interesting, Ray. You've got a big smile on my face. Well, it's good to know that you never smoked, so... And your age is proof that you've lived healthy, so that's great. So, Ray, we're through your teenage teenage years were through school, so here I know that you have had to start noticing girls. So here is my famous question I ask all of my VIPs. When and how old were you when you got your first kiss? And do you know where you were, and do you remember her name?
Yes, I do. When we had dances at school, they did not allow us to fraternize with the students. Our director believed that he was kind of against people hooking up and getting married. They were not, if you even got caught passing a note, we had a teacher, her name was Clara Pratt. She was our civics teacher, and we used to call her the cop. We even bought her handcuffs and stuff for Christmas one year in a billy club, and she got the biggest kick out of it. But if she caught you, she'd say, "I'll take that," and she'd whip it out of your hand before you were passing it to her. But she never turned us in. But it was, we used to do stuff like that. And the first girl I ever kissed, her name was Irma Barrows.
Irma, that's not a name you hear. How old were you, Ray, when you got your first kiss?
Oh, I don't know, 14.
14, and you've liked girls ever since. Ray, tell us, after high school and you graduated high school, did you further your education, and if so, where?
I was going to say also one of the things I did at school was I built the first school radio station. In fact, Ronnie Millsap mentioned that in Raleigh on his talk. In fact, I got it right up in the Globe. I loved electronics, loved sound. I got this old transmitter, and we got that thing running, and some of the kids did disc jockey, and then the school let us improve it. And it, like I said, I got it right up in the Globe. My mom had the clipping of it, and it got lost. I was hoping I could have gotten it. But my sister-in-law, when my mom passed away, came up and cleaned all everything out. And I never got a hold of it. But anyway, that's one of the things that I did at school that was pretty cool, I thought.
Absolutely. Something to be very proud of. So did you further your education after you graduated, Ray?
Yes. I went to Lowell Tech. And Lowell Tech is a small college.
Not charging.
I only went 2 years for classes. I wanted to learn electronics and the theory of electronics, you know, E times I times R and resistance current and voltage, and that's what I wanted to continue my education in, sound electronics, and that's what I did.
So studying sound electronics, were you treated differently from the sighted students, Ray?
No, I wasn't. That's one thing, I don't know if I can say it right, a lot of my buddies and friends that I hang around with, and they'll say something or do something. Geez, I forget you're blind. To me, that's a great compliment.
Absolutely. I know exactly where you're coming from. Ray, how many instruments do you play?
Well, I'm basically a bass guitar player. I mean, I did take piano, and I did, on my tracks, you've heard them. I play all the instruments. I play piano, but I'm not a pianist. I'm not like Mark and them guys that can really play Lou. I'm not, and Janice. Those kids play, I can say kids because they're younger than me. They play wonderful. But I'm basically guitar, bass.
So I'm assuming that your first instrument that you learned to play was the piano in school. Is that correct?
Yes, but I don't know. I didn't care for the Skater's Waltz and so... some of those pieces, the little minuets and stuff. Yeah, she lost faith in me. she excused me.
Well, Ray, you mentioned that you played some while you were in high school, and you actually got paid. Tell us a little bit about that.
The reason we got paid, because Jimmy was so good. I mean, we used to play some of the schools. We used to play St. Joseph's Academy, which was a girls' Catholic school. We played dances. And Dana Hall, these are all like prep schools. And I'd never played, a literal club until I left school, of course. But one night, I did, there was a group called the Lane Brothers. And they used to be on a radio station in Boston. And so I used to go to the station every Saturday because I got to know them, and they were very good. Well, one night I snuck in the Hillbilly Ranch in Boston where they were playing, and they found out about it. Mr. Smith, he grounded me for almost a month.
So you did get into some trouble, I see. Ray, tell us, what career did you pursue after you finished your Technical School of Sound Electronics? Where did you go after that?
I wanted to do sound. I wanted to record. I wanted to be a recording engineer. Well, at school, of course, I learned broadcasting. There was a friend of mine, his name was Norm Prescott. He was a well-known disc jockey in Boston. And he had a radio school, for teaching broadcasting. And Norm became a good friend of mine. And he said, you don't have to pay. So I actually got a chance to go to broadcasting school to kind of learn how radio worked, how the announcers are, how they had to get news, about the teletype and all that, and how to cue records, all kinds of stuff. I was fortunate. He was a wonderful guy. And his engineer was a guy by the name of Arnie Ginsberg, who was also a very popular DJ in the 60s, 70s. In fact, he just died the other day. He was 93. I got to know him, and he used to help me out. I had some good friends that really were there for me.
Sounds like it, Ray, to go to broadcasting school free was excellent. So after you did all of this, where was your first job?
Believe it or not, my first job was actually playing my first club, of serious money. I would get little jobs, like play on the radio. In those days, I worked with a group called Gene Laverne and the Lone Star Ranch Gang. Every Sunday, he ran a place called the Lone Star Ranch. It wasn't a nightclub. It was a park, outdoor venue, but everyone would bring in a Nashville act. Like Johnny Cash and Hank Snow and all these artists. And in fact, I got to know Johnny Cash. When I was in Nashville, I saw him, and he remembered me because I worked with him twice before that. And that was really my first job, working with Gene Laverne.
So how old were you at this time, Ray, when you were really getting started?
I was like 18, 19. About 19 when I started to work with Gene Laverne. And we'd play different places. We played even church halls and different places, later I did play clubs, bar rooms. But I can say one thing: I never drank on a job, and over the years I played many.
So Ray, after your initial at 19, and you tell us how long you did that. Where did you go next? Did you continue to be in a band, or did you ever do any radio broadcasting, or did you do sound for local bands or anyone famous?
We used to play on a thing called the Hayloft Jamboree, and Joyce used to hear us, but she was young. Joyce was a little younger than I was, but she'd remember hearing the Hayloft Jamboree, and we were on that. Then my first real project, beside playing clubs to keep eating, I opened up my first full-blown recording studio in 1959.
Tell us a little bit about that, Ray.
Well, my studio was in Cambridge on Mass Avenue. I got help from some good people. We built the room up. You know, you have to, when you could do a full studio, you have to find the right kind of property. And then you have to insulate, make the room acoustical in the right way so that you can use it for recording. And I had to get me a grand piano and an organ and different kinds of things too. But our main business turned out to be jingles. We used to do a lot of jingles. But what's really interesting is when we were at Perkins, we had to learn Braille music, solfeggio. And you know what? It paid me. It paid me a lot because, and some of the kids, because when we used to do jingles, we used to, Lucy or a couple of other people would write out all their parts in Braille, and they would sing them. I should have dug up some jingles so you could hear them. One of our biggest jingles was Dunkin' Donuts. We did their first jingle.
That was my next question. Tell us some famous jingles that you produced.
Well, back then, the Dunkin' Donut jingle with Dunkin' Donuts, so light. Dunkin' Donuts, Dunkin' Donuts, 52 varieties, count them and see. With a shop around the corner from wherever you may be. Light, so light. Dunkin' Donuts for the family.
Oh, how cool. Any other famous jingles that you recall, Ray, that you produced?
Yeah, Midas Muffler, when they first started. And then we did a lot of, you know, banks and stuff like that. We used to do, when we really got, I worked for a company called, we used to do jingles. They would go all over the country, and we do like banks, car dealers. We did like Dodge car dealers. We did
the Pontiac.
Pontiac. In fact, that was my first sponsor when I was on the radio, was Hosmer Sales, which was a Pontiac dealer in Boston area. I mean, there's so many things. I was very fortunate to, you know, to get, you know, I had a good start, and I had some good help like Arnie Ginsberg and people like that.
Sounds like it, Ray. You were talking about a sponsor on the radio. So tell us a little bit about when you were on the radio.
When it was a morning show, and the hard part was, at that time, I was playing till midnight, and I had to be at the station at 5:30 the next morning. Then I'd go home and get some more sleep.
Yeah, I would think that would make it a little hard. So, Ray, when you were producing, did you produce for anyone famous? And if so, who?
Well, see, to get into that, what I did is I sold the studio, and Bill Hanley, who is a big part of my life, he was a younger fellow than I was, but he was into doing sound. And I started with Bill 62 or 3, somewhere in there. And that's when the ball really started rolling to work with famous people. We used to do the Newport Jazz Festival. So the first few years, we just did the sound. I would mix the sound. I was one of the mixers, because it was a three-day thing, and there was afternoon shows, night shows. We'd take turns mixing. Later, we got to record. I was put on the recording. That's what I really wanted to do. I recorded, like at the Folk Festival, I recorded Joan Baez and Judy Collins and a lot of the...
Peter, Paul, and Mary.
Yeah, Judy Collins was a good friend of mine. And other folk, Pete Seeger, you know, whoever appeared at the Newport that year, I recorded a lot of them. And, of course, in the jazz era. See, George Weem was the guy who ran the festivals. First, he'd run the Newport Jazz Festival on the 4th of July. That was a standard. And the Folk Festival was maybe a month later. So we actually worked for George Weem twice a year at least. And then other years he ran other people. We did Barbara Streisand. We just did the sound. I did not record her. But we got to mix the sound. We did Frank Sinatra. And when he was with Mia Farrell, he stayed on the yacht in Newport. Then he'd come and do his thing. And we did a lot of the groups back then. Bill was the first guy to really build a system that outdoor sound sounded good. A lot of the old stuff was all horns, speakers. Well, what we did is a lot of the theaters were going out of business by then, and they were throwing out these huge Altec speaker cabinets. This is getting maybe too technical, but anyway, we would go to auctions and buy them. And then we would power them babies up and change them over specs. And then we would use them, and you could sit anywhere in the audience. You could hear the high end. You could hear the bass. So that's what really got going. And we were the best sound. I mean, we did all kinds of venues, including we did the Beatles at Shea Stadium. We did all those groups, Chicago, Baltimore, St. Louis, Bush Memorial. We did the Stones 3 or 4 times, and other groups that we did. But one of the most interesting is we did Johnson's inaugural, and that was quite interesting. And that was a very tricky job because we had the Mormon Tabernacle Choir there. So we actually had to set up practically a whole different system to do them. And not only that, we had to have a full backup system. If one system went down, we had to be able to keep it going. And that was quite an experience, working with the Secret Service. We had to do all kinds of weird things, like a mic stand. We could not have any metal showing on it. Maybe if they thought we'd put 8 million volts through it, I don't know. But we had a duct tape, no metal exposure. I mean, things like that. It's really weird.
Well, Ray, you have definitely had a very exciting life and met a lot of great musicians and had great experiences that none of us will ever have the opportunity to do. My next question, Ray, is there a particular artist that you worked with over the years, one artist that you really enjoyed working with?
It was Peter, Paul, and Mary. Paul, Noel Stuckey, still lives up here in Maine. I worked with them quite a bit. And I used to, Mary, they were awful nice people. I still, off and on, keep touch with Noel. Of course, Mary passed away. I also, of course, worked with Bob Dylan. And a lot of in the village, we used to do all those clubs, like the Fillmore, and we'd do sound there for the Doors and all those groups back then, the Youngbloods, all those Richie Havens, all those kind of, we used to do sound for them. Then at the other extreme, we used to do another room that we used to do sound was in the Empire State Building. And that was called the Riverboat, but it was a round room. And that's where they'd have the Mills Brothers, Nat King Cole, all of that. And my favorite person of that type was Nat King Cole to work with. This is when the first wireless microphones came out. So we said, Nat, would you like to try a wireless mic? He said, a what? You know, and we put it on him. Because it has a little transmitter you put in your pocket, and then you hold up, you hook up a plug in a mic to it, and He went crazy. He said, I'll buy it from you right now. I'll buy it from you right now. I said, we only got one. They're just starting to make them. He was willing to almost kill us for it. I mean, not literally. But he was so impressed. I said, well, we'll let you know when there is one available. But what a nice guy. And I always loved his group. Even, you know, even when he had just the trio. And he was at Newport, too. So I remember him from there, too.
Who was the most difficult artist that you ever worked with?
Well, they're different venues. At Newport was Dizzy Gillespie. As he, you know, he's a trumpet player. We tell him to stay on the mic. And he'd look at you and say, up yours, you know. That's the kind of look he gave you. And, I mean, that's what the guys told me. I believe them. And he would walk away from the mic. And he's playing his thing. I mean, it wasn't going out over the system. I mean, it, of course, the mics picked up some of it. But, I mean, he was very uncooperative. Another time, a thing that happens to you on those kind of jobs, we were doing Count Basie. So we're all set up. It's going great. Then Count, he reaches in the piano, takes the mic out of the piano, and starts talking to the people and the stage manager didn't catch it. So when he went to the next tune, I'm looking for a piano on the mixer. I said, where the hell did the piano go?
Any other artist that you would say was very difficult to work with?
Not really, but, well, thank goodness. I didn't have to work the stage because we would put the mixer probably a third of the way back to the audience. In the audience, so that I could hear what they're hearing, so that you could mix it properly. Now, when you do recording, that's a whole different environment. You have to do it different. I don't know. We had a problem with Stevie Wonder. Where was this? This was in Houston. This was later in his career, too. He had a new group. And they bought some of these new high-powered amplifiers and stuff like that. And his band played so loud, you couldn't even get a mix. It was just so loud. And he was very unhappy with us. So, you know, some jobs don't go right. I mean, when you do a lot of stuff like we did, there are times that it does not go right. So you're not their best friend. And later we were able to cool him down and he understood what went wrong. But we've had, in fact, the people with Frank Sinatra were kind of nasty because they did something wrong. They wouldn't let us mix it. So what we did is just handle the power end. Well, they were feeding us distortion from their mixer. And they blamed us for it, you know, for the sound. We said, well, we have every time when you do a job like that, we hook oscilloscope to it. It will record everything that went on. It was a special machine, and we showed them, this is what you gave us. And, we've had jobs go not too well.
Well, before we move on to a little bit of personal information in your life, I've got to ask, because I'm a big Elvis fan, did you ever meet Elvis Presley?
Nope, never did. However, a lot of my friends played on his records. My friend Bob Moore is the bass player you hear on Heartbreak Hotel. You hear Bob Moore on King of the Road doing those bass lines. That's Bob Moore. And there's a blind friend of mine who... Some of you know that are listening, because he's on the website with us, Pig Robbins, Hargis Robbins. I've known Pig since the 60s when I was recording in Nashville. I worked for Mercury Records there. That's what I really wanted to do, though, was, to produce records.
Well, Ray, it sounds like you've had a very exciting life and one that you should be very proud of. But we're going to talk a little bit about some personal things right here because time's getting away. It's so interesting. Time flies. Tell us when you met Joyce and how you met her and when did you two marry?
I was married previously. And some of you know her, and she's a wonderful lady. She really was. We were young and stupid. But thank goodness we've been friends for a long time, ever since. And she worked. She was one of the girls that used to write all the arrangements for the jingles. And we worked, you know, together. And we also did a lot of background singing, you know, like doo-wah stuff. And these artists would come into my studio and they would, do background singing. And she would write out the charts. I mean, what was amazing is they didn't have to practice much because they had it written out. They could read the Braille and read exactly what she wrote and sing exactly what she wrote.
So tell us when you met Joyce. How did you meet and when did you and Joyce marry?
I met her at the Lodestar Ranch. we were just friends at that time. And then we did not marry right away. Okay. We didn't get married, and we both kind of went our separate ways. But we kept in touch off and on through the years. And Joyce married, and so I was single for years. Then I met Joyce, and I got together in 1998. Back together in 98. I met her in 1959 first. That's how long I've known her. And we got married in 1999.
Wow, so you've had a good 20-some-odd years together. Awesome, Ray. Tell me, Ray, and the rest of us, is there a particular person in your life that is a major role model?
Well, I'll tell you, one of them definitely was Paul Bogus. He was just a wonderful man. If you want to talk a person I like to work with, I have a friend that I worked with was Bill Hanley. He was my boss. We both respected each other greatly. He never let my blindness be a crutch or anything like that. He'd ask me, "Can you do it?" If I said yes, he never questioned it. I must say that, one of the best people, and Bill was such, I mean, believe me, we were under pressure many times. Either the truck was late with some of the equipment, the guys who's running the concert or whatever, they're screaming at you. But I never saw that guy really, or if someone made a mistake, he would never... I've never seen him raise his voice and scream and swear at people. Bill is just a nice guy to work with, and he's a good friend. He still calls me all the time. Another interesting job, though, I did, I thought I'd like to mention, is in the Apollo. I did an album with James Brown. I tell you, that was interesting.
Definitely. I would think that would be. Okay, Ray, tell us, if you could change one thing in your life or relive one thing in your life, what would that be?
I'm a trusting person, and I started Wayside Records, and my friend of mine and I, we finally got a backer. This is when we recorded. I started the label and the publishing company. Because I wasn't smart enough, I let it get away from me. And I ended up with nothing. The only thing I can say is that I have my, I produced one record that was in Nashville. In fact, Pig played on it. And that was, I guess, the worst thing that happened to me. I let it slip by. Because I trusted people.
What are your hobbies, Ray, other than music? Anything else you like to do besides music?
Well, I like old-time radio, and that's about it. I mean, I play, you know, I play around with, you know, with the computers, of course. I like old-time radio, but I like a lot of the music. I like most types of music if it's done well. I like classical, I like country, and I like some of the rock. You know, of course, we did a lot, even the Motown stuff. We did, Marvin Gaye and, of course, Stevie and some of those groups, the Four Tops. You know, we did a lot of those, some of the Motown groups. My friend Mike McLean, he was the chief engineer at Motown, and he got me some work, too, outside work.
Ray, if you could go anywhere in the world, money is no object, where would you go and why?
That's a good question. Where would I go? If I could go, I always wanted to go to Ireland. I'm French, but I've been to Europe, by the way. I have been to Europe, but I would have liked to have, I love Celtic music, and I would like to have gone to, like, Dublin. And Joyce has, her grandparents were from Northern Ireland.
He was an Irish fiddler.
Yeah, and her mother's family's from Scotland. And I would love, I don't know why, I just, I love their music. I love their humor. That's where I'd really like to go and spend some time.
Maybe you and Joyce will get there one day. What is on your bucket list, Ray?
On my bucket list? Well, I would still like to be able to, I'd love to be able to, you know, to produce, go back to Nashville or in do a session again. I enjoyed it. I mean, when you work in that area and you sit behind the glass and you hear these guys like Hargis and Bob Moore and all these guys, you hear them work. And I've done sessions with them. It's just great, you know, to hear that kind of talent. And you can say, oh, could you play it this, or could you do that, or could you do this? And that's, and I love to pick material for artists. I enjoy doing that.
Ray, what keeps you busy these days?
What I'd like to do now, I just want to stay healthy and enjoy what I'm doing, what I got. I do enjoy studying the Bible. I do that. That's when I'm... But I really enjoy the people that I know. And I try to be friendly to everybody. I try to be kind to everybody.
And you definitely do that, Ray. My last question, Ray, and we're going to open it up to the members so they can ask a few questions before we end our interview tonight. But my last question to you is, when did you become part of VIP, and how has VIP changed your life?
Well, number one is I met some great, great people. I met some nice friends. And it's a variety of people, and, you know, we're all trying to survive, and we encourage each other, and that's also nice. Like, we have musicians chat on there, and we all get together and talk shop. Then I get onto the other rooms, and I harass a few people. When did I get on? I'm trying to think. I know it was John, you can blame John Harris for that. I used to be on, I can't think of the other website. Well, anyway, they talked me into VIP, and I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed being here, I would say, 4 years, I think. Hasn't been that long.
Well, Ray, it has been a joy getting to know you, and it's been a joy getting to interview you and hear about your exciting life. We are now going to open up the floor to members to ask Ray a question. So remember, if you'll key up one at a time, please let Ray answer your question before the next person keys up. So who wants to ask Ray the first question?
Ray, you play bass.
Yes, yeah, but I learned on acoustic bass. Then, of course, I had to play electric afterwards.
Else, I don't think he heard your entire question because you lost your key.
I was just wondering what make of bass and guitar you play, as Fender or Martin or anything like that.
Well, I have Martins. We have three Martins in the house here of different types. Got a 12-string, 6-string, and Joyce has a 6-string that she bought. She's had since 1954. So that's... And
you have lots of guitars.
And a bass... And I play a telly, and I have, believe it or not, it's just a Japanese bass, but it does what I need to do.
Anybody else have a question for Ray?
Hey, Ray, I've played Martins most of my life, and they're wonderful instruments. Where did you first learn to play bass?
At school. My music teacher, Paul Bargus, he taught me bass.
Anyone else have a question for Ray?
Did you ever craft a song or write a song or help write one?
No, I'm not a songwriter. I wish I was. You know, I was in on a couple of groups where we did write a song. I don't even remember who got the credit for it. It's called "Let's Turn Back the Hands on the Clock" is the name of the song, and we recorded it in Nashville.
Ray, did any of the music recordings that you did hit the charts and go anywhere?
Yes, one. And that was on my label that I started, Wayside Records. And then Mercury took it over, but we kept our label. We were able to, Mercury distributed it, because believe me, you couldn't afford to do it if you didn't have a major label involved. And that was the Tennessee Birdwalk with Jack Blanchard and Misty Morgan.
Anybody else have a question for Ray? Ray, I would just like to say thank you so much for agreeing to be my VIP of the month. And I have thoroughly enjoyed learning about your exciting life and getting to know you more this evening. And Ray, I'm going to let you introduce your favorite song and give a little bit of details before we play Ray's favorite song.
It wasn't my favorite song, but I sure lived off of it for a while. I think that it's a song you either like or you don't like. It's kind of a protest kind of a song, if you really look at it the way the words go. And it was a novelty record. That's why I think it went. I haven't heard a record that sounds like it since.
Well, this is Ray introduced the song. Ray made his millions on this song, folks.
Take away the trees and the birds will have to sit upon the ground. And take away their wings. Birds will have to walk to get around. And take away the bird bats, and dirty birds will soon be everywhere. Take away the feathers, and the birds will walk around in underwear. Take away their, and the birds will have to whisper when they sing. Thank you.
some trees so the birds won't have to sit upon the ground. And how about some wings so the birds won't have to walk to get around. And how about a bird bath or two so the birds will all be clean. And how about some feathers so their underwear no longer will be seen. How about a little so the birds won't have to whisper when they sing. Some common sense, it won't be blocking traffic in the spring. Oh, remember me, my darling, when spring is in the air and the ball-headed birds all whispering everywhere. When you see them walking southward in their dirty underwear, that's Tennessee bird walk. That's Tennessee bird walk. That's Tennessee bird walk. That's Tennessee bird walk.
Thank you, everybody, for coming out for the VIP interview with Ray Fournier tonight. Ray, thank you so much for being my VIP of the month. And next month, July 27th, mark your calendars, our VIP for the month of July will be our own Andrea DeClantz, Cat Mom. So don't miss it.
This has been a presentation of VIP Conduit.